No one likes to feel stuck, especially by your cloud. But the IBM cloud is the most open and secure public cloud for business. It can manage all your apps and data anywhere. Smart loves problems. IBM, let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/flexible.
This is The Sporting Life on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Here's Jeremy Schapp.
Joined now by one of our regular guests, particularly on the subject of soccer. He is a philosopher and he is the author of the book, What We Think About When We Think About Football. It's a pleasure to welcome back to The Sporting Life, Simon Critchley. Simon, thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much, Jeremy. Nice to be back.
Simon, it was a big week, at least in Milan. We saw, again, Leo Messi honored as the FIFA World Player of the Year on the men's side. We saw Megan Rapinoe win the award for Women's Player of the Year. When you think about Leo Messi now, and the fact that he is dominated or co-dominated alongside Cristiano Ronaldo the last decade plus of the world's game, and showing very little signs of diminishing capabilities, how do you make sense of that?
Messi is an extraordinary player. What can you say? I mean, you know, it's he's a kind of an alien, and it's hard to imagine that it will end. You know, I was in Barcelona last November doing some football events and met a lot of Barca fans, and you know, they're getting ready for his departure. They know this isn't going to last forever. But it's lasted a long time, and, you know, obviously I would have liked Virgil van Dijk to win the Best Player Award, but
because you're
it's hard
a Liverpool
to argue
fan.
With Messi. It's hard to argue with that. I mean, the man is extraordinary, and it's the subtlety of his talent and the fact that he does things. You know, I always think Messi is the player of the playback, of the slow-mo replay, and then you see what he's done. You know, when you watch it live, you don't really see what Messi's done. You know, it's when you see him on the slow-motion replay and you see how he made space, how he did a certain run, laid the ball off, or, you know, scored from 30 yards with almost no backlift or whatever. It's hard to argue with Messi getting an award, but I would have preferred it if it had been Virgil van Dijk, but not Cristiano Ronaldo. He's got enough awards.
No, of course not. We're speaking with Simon Critchley, the author of What We Think About When We Think About Football, and you mentioned Van Dijk, and you are a lifelong supporter of Liverpool.
Yes, sir.
Which, you know, had a spectacular spring, of course, and we haven't spoken to you since then. You know, Liverpool is one of those teams with a great history. It's almost the equivalent here in North America of, say, the Montreal Canadiens. Great history, in some ways an unrivaled history, certainly much greater and grander history than even Manchester United before Alex Ferguson came along and kind of flipped the tables. But like the Canadiens, went a long time without reaching the pinnacle. What was it like to see your Liverpool team back on top?
It's hard to describe. I was in Madrid for the Champions League final, and I didn't have tickets to the game. I tried everything to get tickets for the game, but I flew in from, I was in Norway. My son drove down from London in his mum's car, and we met in Madrid. And that day, you know, I made a promise to him when he was a baby that he wouldn't have a choice. He'd support Liverpool Football Club, and you know, it would come good at a certain point. And we've never seen Liverpool win a major championship together. Mm. We've seen us lose a few finals. So to be together in Madrid with all of those fans, it was astonishing. It was a Dionysian experience. It was an extraordinary pleasure. And you know, to win the Champions League for the sixth time, to know that the team is back, is well organized, there's questions you can raise about any football team, but God, we're impressive at the moment. We're top of the league, six wins out of six, and you know, we're playing against the best football team in the world, which is Manchester City. So the only way to win the English Premier League is with perfection, really. You draw, you lose, you're in real trouble. I mean, it used to be when Ferguson was coach, he would say, well, United could lose six games a year, eight games a year, right, and still win the Premiership. With the level of performance that Pep Guardiola has brought into the game. You can't mess up anymore. So Liverpool are performing at that level, and you know, I hope it continues. It gives me great delight. That's all I can say.
And it's interesting as well. And many people were talking about it at the time that the victory occurred in the context of Liverpool itself and its fan base, and mm-hmm. with the shadow of Brexit playing out against the backdrop of Brexit, one of these cities that, unlike London in the south, you could argue globalization to some extent has left behind, and those kind of competing tensions there. In that context, how did you view the victory?
I mean, all of that is true. All of that is true. I mean, Liverpool is, you know, the city, it's, in a sense, it's most like somewhere like New York or Marseille. It's a city that's in a country, but not really of that country. It's a kind of a city apart. Liverpool's always been at a certain distance from the rest of England because of its ethnic composition, the fact that it's, you know, the majority Irish descent, the oldest black community in the UK is in Liverpool, or the Chinese community, all that stuff. And the team and the fans identify as European. So there were one of these banners that was going around. Actually, it was the season before last. It was during the campaign that led terribly to the defeat to Real Madrid. Mm. Blues leave, Reds remain. So that, you know, Liverpool are Remainers. We are mm-hmm. we are European royalty. We're a European team, and we think of ourselves in European terms. And so it's very much politically the Liverpool fan base, this largely kind of historically kind of working class fan base, identifies European against the kind of little Englanders of Boris Johnson and characters like that. So there's a very clear political dimension to that, and someone like Jurgen Klopp supports that. You know, he's come out as a Remainer. I mean, yesterday he announced that he's joining the Common Goal project, giving 1% of his salary to the to good causes. The thing that was organised by Juan Mata, Manchester United, which is a great thing. And you know, there is it's hard to think about football in relationship to a kind of egalitarian politics, but you know, Liverpool that's what the team is about, and I think people see that. So when I meet fans in different parts of the world, they, you know, our identity is it communicates in a way that other teams are not able to do that. So there's something special about Liverpool as not just a football team who play extremely good football, but as a kind of a set of values that people identify with. I think it's very important.
We're speaking with Simon Critchley, whose book, What We Think About When We Think About Football, was published in 2017. And Simon, before we let you go, you know, one thing here in the U.S., and I know you were over in Europe during the summer as the Women's World Cup was taking place, you know, one thing we talked about here was the English team, its excellence, its run at the Women's World Cup. Well, 20 years ago, everybody knows the story of the 99ers here and what that team meant to women's sports and the empowerment of women's sports in America. English team obviously didn't win this time, but it was a strong performance with a star player. How was that team celebrated and embraced in your native country?
I mean, very well. I mean, there's been a real, I think, it's a step change in women's soccer, and it's fantastic to see. And you know, Megan Rapinoe won the Best Player Award yesterday, and Jill Ellis too. And it's these are, so there's been a real shift in the perception of women's soccer, and also the coverage of it. The fact that you know, websites that I'm in, you know, like The Guardian or whatever, will cover a lot of women's football as well as men's football. It's changing, and that gives me enormous heart. It's a question of how that the international dimension to women's football is then replicated at the club level and becomes a kind of a solid thing with big crowds, and is able to generate the kind of revenue that can begin to compete with the men's game. But I'm hopeful. I mean, but a word on the U.S. I thought that England, yeah, we did well, but I mean, the extraordinary thing about the U.S. women's soccer team is the aggression, the aggression and the power of that team. And I mean, they're a great team in the sense in which all great teams have got technical ability, you know, spatial awareness, are well organized. But all great teams need that sheer aggression to dominate the opposition. And England were just found wanting in that game. America was stronger and wanted it more, and technically superior. So it shifted the perception of women's soccer. Is that going to have a knock-on effect in women's club football? Hopefully. I mean, it's getting there, but we'll see. And the other question here is, you know, what impact the success of the women's team will have on the U.S. men's team, and you know, how that's going to factor through. And I suppose the question I've always got here is the you know, the plausibility of the MLS and the fact that, you know, when I'm here and elsewhere in the U.S. and I'm talking football to people, yeah, they'll be watching some local stuff, but they're mainly watching the English Premier League, the Liga, Serie A, Bundesliga. And because with it, that's so well, you know, covered on television now, you can keep up with that. So I worry about the kind of infrastructure of the national game and how that's going to feed through to the national team and what success they'll have.
The Premier League certainly takes up a lot of the oxygen in the room wherever you were talking about soccer. Simon Critchley's book, What We Think About When We Think About Football, again, is available now in paperback. Simon, it's always a pleasure, and good luck. Good luck against Sheffield United this weekend.
Good to talk to you again.
I'm Jeremy Schapp, and you can listen to new editions of The Sporting Life every Saturday and Sunday morning on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app, beginning at 6 a.m. Eastern Time.